welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for December 11th, 2011. I'm your host, Reverend Koyo Kobose. I'm so glad you joined us. The broadcast is being sponsored by, and this is our new organizational name, the Bright Dawn Center of Oneness Buddhism. We have officially changed our name from the Bright Dawn Institute for American Buddhism to the more universal, perhaps, orientation of Bright Dawn Center of Oneness Buddhism. And we're making the change in our website and newsletters and so forth. And in fact, in the next newsletter that's going to be coming out pretty soon, we have the lead article that describes the background of our name evolution, and that's quite interesting too. Well, let's begin with our guest today to give us a Dharma glimpse, and his persona, I guess you would say, although persona is not maybe the best word. You know how spiritual people, the name is important. In the Muslim tradition, you know, Cassius Clay became Muhammad Ali. And so, or in Shinran, you know, his family name and given name, you know, was very different. And then at different times in his spiritual journey for personal reasons, wanting to cap his big change in his spiritual path, and he took a new name as a spiritual tool. And so, for example, he took the name Gutoku, which means bald-headed foolish one. Manchi Kiyozawa, famous Buddhist leader in the 1800s, took the name the translation means December fan. He felt that, you know, he was as useful or useless as a fan in December. A name that's, I guess, in these latter two cases, to remind oneself to not let self-centered pride and arrogance take over one's life. And that's how names can function. And I mention all of this because our Dharma Glimpse guest is Toyo Katamori. Toyo means Eastern Sun. He has a tremendous interest in Eastern philosophy, culture, history. He's active. He's from Worcester, Massachusetts. He was part of our LM2 group. He was one of his hobbies is reenactments. You know how they do Civil War reenactments? Living history. I didn't really know much about that, but that's a fascinating thing. You know, if you reenact, you essentially re-experience what was going on in those days. If we were to reenact in a religious context something, just like they do maybe when they have Christ carried the cross up to Calvary and it's reenacted, you know, it gives a sense for the participants and the observers, audience, to sort of experience history, make history come alive. So Toyo, and he took the name Katamori, you know, and I won't go into all the personal reasons for that, but his given name is David Erickson, but after going through our program, he received his Dharma name, he changed his family name, and legally changed his name from David Erickson to Toyo Katamori. And It shows you the power of a name or a persona, or how we want to present ourselves. Okay. And so, without further ado, we will have him give the Dharma glimpse for today.
My Dharma glimpse is titled Free Benevolence, and I just wanted to say hello to everybody and happy holidays, and hope everybody's doing all very well. So, free benevolence. Free is defined this way: given, made, or done of one's own accord, voluntary or spontaneous, costing nothing and not affected or restricted by a given condition or circumstance. We are free peoples, and it can only be done and found our own way. Being free is our freedom. Our freedom must be benevolent. Benevolence must be free. It must have its freedom. There cannot be an implication of undue exercise onto your free benevolence. Otherwise, it is not true benevolence. So many will say, freedom can only be found in the way of something or by going down a certain path. Example, freedom can only be found in the way of Christ. How can it be free if only a Christ can give it? Buddhism, the path to freedom. Not at all. You are the only one that makes the opportunity to exercise what path you choose to go. No one man can exalt a freedom or freedoms. Freedom cannot be exalted. That puts a price tag on it. He is benevolent because he gives us freedom. He makes you free. You must be free to be free. No one can give it to you. Only you can get it. Religions are mere guides, paths, and give many faith. The tools you acquire in its study will allow you to obtain your skills to practice free benevolence. You have the power to determine action without restraint. If you do not, then you will need help. Help with a certain required guidance from a Christ or even a Buddha, a friend, a loved one, and even at times an acquaintance. Guidance can come to you simply as a sunny day, a certain smell, and even a word. Free is not owned by any one person other than you. Everything that you do must be a benevolent freedom, and the benevolence must be free benevolence. The benevolence we define as an act, an inclination to give charity or kindness, to give a gift for love, friend, thought, or wish is a form of benevolence. Charity given to one or many that are in need is a form of benevolence. Is this an opportunity to transaction benevolence when one asks for a favor or help? If one should ask for something and that one asks you give should give without any strings attached, then this is free benevolence, and thus is truism. This is a transaction free from opportunity of gain by worth or value by the giver. If one should ask, and one always gives, but at a cost, then that is not free benevolence. It is a transaction which contains worths and values. One should never expect something for nothing. Of course, but benevolence should always be free. If you have a guest speaker and he or she speaks for you, then that is it. Done deal. No money, no worth or value needs to be in transaction. A simple showing of gratitude is only needed. Because we live in a world of currencies, we are all prisoners of values, qualities, worths, and values expecting returns, and they are what makes you not free and a and true to free benevolence. Have you ever given someone something to someone and refused a return? Sure, you all have. That's a free transaction. You felt pretty good about it, didn't you? You walked away with no strings attached. Felt good. When one or many alone within an organization are conducting a service that promotes certain guidance and asks for assistance, the one being asked should simply give. That in itself is a free benevolent act. It is alone without attachment. An act of giving is almost always considered a donation of some sort. A donation is a gift. It is charity. It is benevolence at its best. Benevolence should never be looked upon with a worth, value, quality, or any return in mind. It should be looked upon as a free benevolent act, free from attachment, and always in gratitude. As lay ministers, we are here to give and give without return. Be free. Be benevolent to your ministry. Be benevolent to your fellow ministers and always to the fellow lay ministers and to those that guided you there. And that is my Dharma glimpse. Thank you.
You know, when I listen to a Dharma glimpse, it sort of triggers associations that I have of sayings or teaching stories that are related to the topic. And it makes a very rich listening experience, you know. Because when we listen, we don't just hear the message. The message comes in through our own filters. And that's not always bad, you know. We can enrich it. And we infuse it and perfume it with our own nuances and so forth, it can deepen the impact for us. So today's message on free benevolence, my father always used to talk about there are no shoulds in Buddhism, no have-tos. Things should be freely given. It's not like, oh, I should give, and or, oh, I have to help out. We shouldn't do things out of a sense of obligation. We should want to do it, not we should do it or have to do it. I want to do it. Total congruence, you know, with our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. We're not split. We're not working against ourselves. And this is a tremendous lesson. And I think that somehow, I don't know how you teach it or learn it. Maybe you see by example is a tremendous source of learning. Parents are examples for their children. Otherwise, the parents are always teaching the children about the difference between work and play and shoulds and have-tos, and you got to give back, the sense of, you know, giving freely, the enjoyment of giving. Hey, you know, give and take, give and take. Oh, okay, I got to give because I received. The joy of receiving and then the joy of giving. And not keeping score, right? I mean, no strings attached, okay? Waiting for the other shoe to drop. No free lunches. There's a whole cultural, societal, social conditioning that goes on that we have to counter as part of our spiritual growth of how we want to live, what kind of person we want to be. Can we live so that the left, you know, there's a saying that your left hand doesn't know what your right hand does. You do something with your right hand, okay, and it should be so compartmentalized, standing alone, unconditional, no strings attached, absolute. See, the word absolute means is the opposite of relative. Relative means, oh, there's some comparison there. Oh, this person gave a lot of large donation in money terms. And how much does that big donor get his name on the on the building or whatever? And the poor person who gave maybe more of a percentage of his gross income and gave it freely, you know, some of this is sort of inevitable in our society. Okay, and yet, individually, we should be aware of what's of this topic of free benevolence. And what is free? You know, do you freely give? Do you live from the inside out? Or do you let foreign things influence you? Foreign, by foreign we mean outside your own life. External influences. Okay? Things like expectations, obligations that are put upon us that doesn't come from within. What is free? You know, I remember in personality theories and psychology classes, they talk about different approaches to, say, to therapy, Freudian approach, behavioral approach, Jungian approach, Carl Rogers. Carl Rogers was a very kind therapist, sort of like Mr. Rogers in neighborhood. A lot of children like Mr. Rogers. He's so soft and kind. He's not the kind of teacher or adult that says, hey, you should do this, you should do that. He says, well, whatever, you're fine just the way you are. Doesn't that sound familiar? You don't have to measure up. Have you given enough? Have you pulled your load? You know, the expectations that we put on ourselves comes from someplace, you know, society's conditioning and so forth. And not necessarily that societal conditions are all bad. We should be aware of the influences on us, and if we want to internalize it because we feel, yes, I want to validate, confirm, and clarify this value for myself as a life value. You know, even though its source might have been from the external, we made it internal. So there's nothing wrong with that. But Carl Rogers in his therapy, you know how when you think about a therapist, one stereotype is the therapist knows what's best for you, for the patient or client, and says, okay, here, do this, do that, or you shouldn't do this or do that, or, you know, he directs the therapy. Let's examine, you know, what's going on in your emotional life. What's, okay, you're the expert, you tell me how I can fix myself. Well, Carl Rogers' approach, so-called Rogerian client-centered therapy, not therapist-centered, client-centered. And the assumption is that the client himself knows what's best for himself. And all he needs from the therapist is a safe therapeutic environment where he is at unconditional, absolute, positive regard. That is a technical phrase. Okay? You provide that kind of safe place, all the defenses can come down. He can really see himself. He doesn't have to put on any airs. And he can heal himself. Heal himself. Huh? See himself. Know that he's all right. Because a lot of the maladjusted stuff is a reaction, a reflex, a defensiveness to try to protect oneself. When you don't have to protect oneself, then you're free to grow according to the inside coming out. There's a story that D.T. Suzuki, when he talks about Christianity, and I always remember this, he says, in his study of Christianity, he came across a story and about Jesus' mother, and he was so impressed by it. And he says, and in fact, he thinks the whole offshoot of a new religion could be based upon this story. But the story is, you see, Jesus is in heaven, and, you know, St. Peter guards the gate, pearly gates, and you have to measure up in order to get into heaven. Jesus comes up to St. Peter one day and he says, gee, hey, Pete, you know, could you sort of pay more attention to your standards? Because there are a lot of unsavory characters I noticed in heaven that have been admitted. And, you know, you're not doing your job quite well to screen them out. And St. Peter said, well, Jesus, I know what you mean. That's true. But it's awfully hard, you know, because I'm doing my best. But, you know, your mother, I found out that your mother is letting in some of these, quote, undesirables, unquote, through the back window. She's opened the window and lets them in. What would happen if struggling human beings live their earthly life knowing that they are accepted just the way they are? What happens in a family when, you know, mother's unconditional love? What happens to a child who knows, gee, I don't have to prove anything? Or are they loved? Do they have to earn their love, get good grades, or be competitive and be first and so forth? Or, gee, if I just do my best, I'm unconditionally accepted. You know, we all want to try to improve ourselves. Let's say become a kinder person or in a certain aspect of our personality. There's a story about stay just the way you are. There was a person who, the specifics does not matter, but he wanted to improve himself, personality. And all of his friends, family, they knew. He had this sort of, if you want to call it a defect, okay? And he himself saw it, and he wanted to improve himself. But personality, you know, changing how one is very difficult. And so he had a difficult time doing it. And finally, one of his friends said, ah, just stay the way you are. You're fine. We love you just the way you are. And he said, oh, man. He just felt so relaxed, so free. And then the funny thing happened. This is the kicker. He changed. The pressure was off, internal, external and internal. Pressure was off, expectations were off, the struggle was off. And that made it easier for him to naturally change, because he wanted to change and be a better kind of person in his interpersonal relationships and so forth. This is a tremendous psychological dimension that underlies this whole teaching here of true liberation, true self. You know, self is not a bad word. We say self-centered, selfish, but that's in a dualistic sense. When we talk about, we might say true self or universal self, the big self, the natural self, see? Because the word self means when something does it by itself, there's a oneness there. It's a totalness there. You're never second-guessing. You're never... It's just like water flows, birds sing. Naturalness. Don't worry about other people's opinion. Ah, he's... We're not talking about that. Let the self do it. Okay? That's what self really means. Itself. The self does it. You don't have to do it. Make it happen. Be yourself. That doesn't mean be selfish. That's, again, in the dualistic sense, self-other. But this big self, there's no difference between self and other. This is a great teaching. Well, that's all for today's broadcast. So until next time, you keep going, and you have a very beautiful Free Benevolence Day. Thank you.